Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Vox Talk for the week of Tuesday the 21st of October. My name is Ross and I'm compiling this week's edition. This week's news items were collected from the local Oxford papers, with some news being edited by Margaret Simpson, with some selected and read by Rosemary Sherigold and Stephen Harness. Sunrise for the upcoming week will be around 7:30, with sunset being around 6 p.m. The copy and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Here, there will be some instructions on how to listen to OxTalk using your Alexa device, and at the end of this edition, you will hear how to access OxTalk online.
Notice to listeners of OxTalk who may wish to use an Alexa smart speaker to access our service. To listen to OxTalk on an Alexa device, you can use the Talking Newspaper skill. You will need to first enable the skill. To do this, simply say, Alexa, enable talking newspaper. Then, to listen to OxTalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open talking newspaper.
Welcome to your talking newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper, or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have any problems listening to OxTalk using an Alexa device, it could be due to the way that your device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set it up in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact OxTalk and we will try to help.
Oxford United's plans for a new stadium have been given the green light to go ahead as speedily as possible. The Secretary of State for Housing, Communities and Local Government, Steve Reid, has said he will not call in the application after it was granted planning permission by Chartwell District Council. Oxfordshire Labour MPs Annalise Dodds and Sean Woodcock, members for Oxford East and Banbury respectively, said they were delighted with the decision after repeatedly raising the issue in the hopes it would not be called in for further consideration. Oxford United want to build a 16,000-seater stadium at the Triangle site near Kidlington, which will become their new home after their lease at the Kassam Stadium runs out. After being approved by the District Council on August 14th, plans were referred to the Secretary of State, Mr. Reid, due to the size of the proposed development. In a joint statement released on Wednesday, October 15, the MP said, "We are delighted to see that the Secretary of State has not called in this application, and we hope that the stadium can now go ahead as speedily as possible. We repeatedly raised this issue directly with the Secretary of State and are so pleased that he has now acted. The new stadium is needed not only for the sake of Oxford United and its many fans, but also for the local economy. We're grateful to everyone who has been working hard to secure the future of our club." MP for Bicester and Woodstock, Callum Miller, in whose constituency the new stadium will be built, said, "This is a major milestone in Oxford United's stadium project and is great news for all the club's supporters. I'm glad that Steve Reid listened to my request to take a prompt decision. Uncertainty and delay would have been no help to anyone. The club can now push ahead with work to meet the planning conditions. Meeting these will deliver the club's commitments to the local community and address concerns raised by local residents. I will continue to work closely with the local parish councils, residents, Chartwell District Council and Oxford United to support delivery of an outstanding stadium with real community benefits that we can all be proud of. The stadium plans will now go back to Chartwell District Council for the final steps before construction can begin." Grant Ferguson, chairman of Oxford United, said, "The Secretary of State's decision not to call in the planning application for our 16,000 capacity stadium on land north of the city means the club can now begin to deliver on its vision. On behalf of everyone at Oxford United, I would like to thank all of our supporters, along with the incredible project team, who have been instrumental in getting us to this point.
To mark ADHD Awareness Month, experts are highlighting the importance of recognising signs early of the condition and ensuring timely assessments and support. Around 32,000 people in Oxfordshire are thought to be living with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, including 8,000 children and 24,000 adults. However, many remain undiagnosed or are facing long waits for assessment. Dr. Angus McClellan, consultant psychiatrist at Oxford ADHD and Autism Centre, said ADHD affects people of all ages, but it remains a challenge for people to recognise the signs in themselves or their children. We see many people struggling because their ADHD has gone unrecognised for years, leading to impacts on work, education, social life and family life. Early identification and support is crucial and can make the difference between a lifetime of frustration and a life in which people are able to thrive. ADHD is a neurodevelopmental condition affecting attention, focus, impulsivity and hyperactivity. While it can bring strengths such as creativity and problem solving, delayed diagnosis can lead to academic struggles for children and career setbacks for adults. Dr. McClellan said in children, the signs of ADHD are often mistaken for laziness or misbehaviour. A child who seems dreamy, forgetful or constantly on the go may be labelled as careless or naughty. In adults, symptoms can be more subtle, especially for women, who may be less prone to hyperactivity. Dr. McClellan said adults may not see themselves as hyperactive, but instead experience inner restlessness, disorganisation and challenges with managing time. Many feel overwhelmed by everyday responsibilities, miss deadlines despite their best intentions, or experience emotional highs and lows that others misinterpret. These difficulties are not a matter of poor discipline, they reflect the impact of ADHD on that person. Dr. McClellan also shared some practical advice for managing the condition. He said, early assessment and diagnosis of ADHD is crucial, ensuring the correct support so no one is ever too old to consider whether they may have ADHD. Once you understand your needs, aim to create constant daily habits. Try to establish regular times for work or study, balanced meals, physical activity and bedtime. Practice calming strategies such as pausing before reacting, deep breathing and journaling to help manage stress and prevent frustration. Engage your colleagues, friends and family, teachers or mentors to provide practical and emotional support. The Adult NHS ADHD service in Oxfordshire is currently experiencing unprecedented demand, with waiting lists exceeding 3 years.
Dinosaur footprints undercovered in Oxfordshire have formed the longest individual sauropod dinosaur trackways in Europe. Researchers discovered nearly 200 dinosaur footprints dating back 166 million years, buried in the mud at Dewar's Farm Quarry near Bicester in the summer of 2024. Five extensive trackways were unearthed to form part of a dinosaur highway. During summer 2025, a team of researchers, co-led by Oxford University Museum of Natural History and the University of Birmingham, returned to the site to carry out further work. The week-long dig resulted in hundreds more individual prints from four trackways being identified and documented, each made by sauropod dinosaurs, large long-necked herbivores such as Setiosaurus. The 200 extra footprints were found were then documented using detailed 3D models of the site from aerial drone photography. These trackways, including Europe's largest sauropod dinosaur trackway at some 220 metres from the first to the last exposed footprint. Through these excavations and analyses, we are building a more and more complete picture of what Oxfordshire was like when dinosaurs roamed here 166 million years ago, said Dr. Duncan Murdoch of Oxford University Museum of Natural History. What is most exciting about this site is the sheer size and number of footprints. We now have evidence of tens of individuals moving through this area at around the same time, perhaps as a herd. Over 7 days this summer, more than 100 people battled against a much drier, harder surface than the previous year, focusing on a set of around 80 very large, up to 1 metre long, sauropod prints that ran approximately north-south across the entire site. Dr. Murdoch added, the hot and dry weather baked the surface like concrete in places, so we weren't able to fully excavate every footprint. In addition to the largest sauropod trackways, three others were uncovered, one of which is a continuation of prints first found in 2022. Although not continuously exposed, it may prove to be an even longer trackway once all the data is placed together. Smaller spines include marine invertebrates, plant material, and a crocodile jaw. Kirsty Edgar, professor of micropaleontology at the University of Birmingham, said, "This site in Oxfordshire is the largest dinosaur track site in the UK, and arguably now the largest mapped dinosaur track site in the world when we consider finds dating back to the 1990s on the same surface nearby."
A new initiative to boost biodiversity is coming to Oxfordshire with the launch of Charwell's First Habitat Bank, providing an area of land where native species and ecosystems can flourish. Habitat banks help developers to offset the impact of building and leave a net positive impact on biodiversity. Charwell District Council is helping to create the bank at Ells Farm near Bloxham with the support of a charity, the Trust for Oxfordshire's Environment. A Section 106 legal agreement establishing the Habitat Bank has been signed, meaning work on the bank can begin. Councillor Jean Conway, the Council's portfolio holder for planning and development management, said, "We know our residents want to see an end to nature depletion and their local ecosystems thriving again. Planning legislation now puts much greater emphasis on the role developers to take in nature restoration, so I'm delighted that we've put pen to paper on the district's first habitat bank. We are actively seeking to facilitate other habitat banks across the district, so I urge any landowner who wants to play their part and enhance their land holdings to get in touch and work with us."
A new town will not encroach on surrounding villages and Bicester, developers have said. Hayford Park is expected to deliver 9,000 new-build homes at REF Upper Hayford near Bicester, in one of the Labour government's new towns. Paul Silver, chief executive of development company Dorchester Living, said the new town was a better alternative than building new houses around existing villages. Mr. Silver said, "What we're offering here is brownfield development, and this is not about whether houses should be built here, it's where houses should be built. Either you build rings of houses around pretty Cotswold villages here, and you destroy the architectural style of those villages, and it's very hard to get infrastructure into 10 little villages, or you choose to put it on a brownfield site where you can plan infrastructure and actually deliver it. We said to the villagers surrounding that we don't want encroachment into the rural environment. One of the things about fortified structures is that people generally live within the fortified structure. If you take yourself back to a medieval castle, you have the walls of the castle, the town was actually inside the castle. That's really the concept of how fortified structures get developed and redeveloped. One of the key things here is this ring all the way around Hayford Park, which means that we're enclosing the development, which is stopping sprawl. And it means that local people around here can understand there is a limit to the size of what this will be. That's one of the first things we looked at. And it's one of the master plan visions that is here to stay. It also means we're protecting Upper Hayford Village from encroachment and Callcott. Dorchester Living has said that its plans, which are in the hands of Charwell District Council, would build houses on around 35% of the land available. That means 65% will be left green, the developer said. Cathy Fleet, clerk to nearby Somerton Parish Council, has argued the ecological impact of such the large development will not be confined to Hayford Park itself, but will extend to surrounding villages, including Somerton. Miss Fleet said this was due to natural ecological interdependencies, claiming Dorchester Living has failed to demonstrate convincingly how the statutory 10% biodiversity net gain will be achieved and, crucially, maintained over the long term. Objectors have also argued that the development could encroach on the wider services through greater pressure on infrastructure, healthcare and shops. If the planning application is granted possibly early next year, construction is expected to start in autumn 2026.
A Green councillor is urging highways bosses to make free bus travel from Oxford Park and Ride a permanent arrangement. Earlier this week, the County Council announced it will provide free park and ride bus journeys for 3 months following the introduction of a congestion charge on October 29th. The charge will help fund the free travel. At the moment, the free bus travel is only a temporary trial and the council will review it after 3 months. A Green City councillor, Lewis Muddyman, is hoping free bus rides from park and rides will become a permanent change. She said, in an ideal world, it would be great if this could become permanent, but I do understand that the county council does not have infinite resources and has to make difficult decisions about funding priorities. Ms. Muddyman added that she also wanted people in Oxford to benefit by being allowed to travel for free on a park and ride bus during the trial, even if they have not parked at a park and ride. I would like people living in the city to benefit as well, because it doesn't make sense for them to drive to a park and ride, she said. Customers with a valid parking ticket for any of the 5 park and ride sites around the Ring Road will be able to get a free return ticket to any Oxford destination by showing their parking ticket to the bus driver. Oxford Park and Ride sites are at Pear Tree, Oxford Parkway, Seacourt, Redbridge and Thornhill, and parking is £2.50 for up to 16 hours. As part of the improvement, the 700 service will increase to every 20 minutes between Monday and Friday and every 30 minutes on weekends, running to a consistent route through the week from Kidlington to Blackbird Leys. New stops will be added to the Redbridge Park and Ride 300 service at Lake Street in Abingdon Road. Passengers will also benefit from better orbital links around East Oxford thanks to improvements to services 100, 500 and 700. Andrew Grant, the councillor's cabinet member for transport management, said these improvements are the direct result of our commitment to improving operating conditions for buses by reducing congestion, and a great example of partnership working between us and the bus operators. They bring real immediate benefits to the people of Oxford and demonstrate the commitment from Oxford Bus Company to improving services following the measures we are taking to reduce journey times and reliability. When asked what will happen at the end of the 3-month trial, a spokesman said the council has agreed to fund free park and ride buses for 3 months. This is only made possible by the congestion charge income.
Prince William reminisced about his glory days during a visit to an Oxfordshire RAF base. The Prince of Wales attended RAF Benson near Wallingford with the Crown Prince of Jordan, Al Hussein bin Abdullah II, on October the 15th. The eldest son of King Charles III said, "Flying is his happy place," as he spoke with old Air Force colleagues about the glory days of serving with the RAF Search and Rescue Force. He chatted about flying Sea King helicopters on rescue missions and described how their sound still goes straight to my heart. When he met former colleagues and others in the mess at the base, he was asked if he still spent time in the cockpit. The Prince replied, "I do still fly, yeah. I keep my hours going. When you learn that skill set, you just don't want it to go. I've definitely lost a lot of the skills I had, but I like to keep on top of my flying, keep doing it, and it's my happy place. I love flying." The future King of the UK and Commonwealth realms wasn't the only trained helicopter pilot visiting, with the Crown Prince of Jordan having completed his own training with the Royal Jordanian Air Force in 2019. Prince William served a 3-year tour with the Search and Rescue Force, and during his time based at RAF Valley in Anglesey, carried out 156 search and rescue operations, resulting in 149 people being rescued before he left the armed forces in 2013. He later served as a helicopter pilot with the East Anglian Air Ambulance, flying missions for 2 years before stepping down in July 2017 to focus on his royal duties. The prince told the group, "I miss the search and rescue, glory days. I miss the Sea King flying around because when I hear it, that noise as it flies past. We had obviously the US state visit the other day, 7 aircraft flying over. Sea King comes in, I was like, there she is. That noise went straight to my heart." This follows several other royal visits to Oxfordshire this month. On October 9th, the Princess of Wales, Catherine, visited Homestart Oxford at Rosehill Community Centre. While there, Her Royal Highness and the parents supported My Homestart Oxford to discuss the challenges they are facing and our one-to-one sessions with the charity have helped them. Meanwhile, Princess Anne, the aunt of the Prince of Wales, attended the Carterton Women's Institute on the occasion of its 100th anniversary in Bryce Norton Road. She also visited RAF Bryce Norton, where she's the Honorary Air Commodore, for the 24 Squadron's 110th anniversary.
More than 6 million vaccinations for COVID-19 have now been delivered across Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire West by the NHS. Health leaders are thanking NHS staff, volunteers and partner organisations for their work to reach the milestone. They are also encouraging eligible people to continue coming forward for vaccinations this winter, although the eligibility criteria has changed. Sarah Bellows, Chief Nursing Officer of the Buckinghamshire, Oxfordshire and Berkshire West Integrated Care Board, said, "Delivering more than 6 million COVID-19 vaccinations is a fantastic achievement and reflects the dedication of NHS teams and partners right across our area. We are proud of the protection this programme has given to people at greatest risk. COVID-19 can still cause serious illness, especially for older people and those with weakened immune systems. We are asking people to look before you book for your vaccine and help to protect yourself, your loved ones and the NHS this winter. Those eligible this winter include people who live in a care home for older adults and people aged 6 months to 74 years with a weakened immune system due to a health condition or treatment."
Barriers tested in Abingdon to protect people's homes should minimise the risk of flooding, according to an MP. Last month, Environment Agency staff tested the temporary barriers in fields behind Chanterelle Way in a bid to protect houses in the area which have been repeatedly flooded. It was a change in policy from the agency, which last year claimed that waterlogged ground in the River Ock floodplain creates safety risks for the use of barriers in this location. Now staff are confident they will be able to operate the barriers safely, and Oxford West and Abingdon MP Leila Moran has written to those living in the area to welcome the progress being made to protect homes in Chanterelle Way and Nash Drive. She said in her letter, "It was good to see that the Environment Agency has been listening to residents and has been working on a temporary flood barrier for the River Ock." The Environment Agency was pleased with the test deployment of the barrier, which will be used alongside pumps to maximise its effectiveness, and they believe it will minimise the risk of flooding from future storms. Ms Moran said a permanent solution to protect homes in South Abingdon was still needed. She added, "I have long pressed for changes to the government funding formula for smaller flood defence schemes. I continue to ask for this change and most recently joined the government consultation on reforming the approach to flood funding." The MP added that along with providing the new barrier, Environment Agency staff have also cleared the River Ock of debris and vegetation to build the capacity of the river to store water and help it to flow better during a storm. They will continue to do an annual maintenance programme, she said. In November, people living in Chanterelle Way and surrounding streets suffered the effects of floodwater inside and outside their houses when the River Ock burst its banks. The floodwater poured across the field behind their homes and the streets were filled for the third time in a year. Homes were also affected in January and September 2024. Ms Moran ended her letter by saying, "Being flooded once is terrible. Nobody should ever have to experience it three times in 1 year." Jim King, who lives in Chanterelle Way and has represented the Ock Valley Flood Group, has suffered flooding at his home on numerous occasions. He welcomed the testing of the barriers last month, adding, "I hope these barriers work After being flooded three times in a year, residents have had enough. These barriers might hold the water back for a while. Dredging also needs to take place to remove silt from rivers and streams. When not in use, the barriers are being stored in West Oxford.
Members of Oxfordshire Cricket have voted to move forward with an attempt to become a registered charity. During a special general meeting on Monday, October the 6th, members voted strongly in favour of sending an application to the Charities Commission. The organisation said the decision marks a major milestone in its journey and provides a strong foundation for the future of cricket across the county. Work will now continue on preparing and submitting the formal application. Once approved, Oxfordshire Cricket will officially operate as a registered charity, which it says will provide a robust framework to support its objectives and enable sustainable growth. This new status is expected to help the organisation to expand its programmes, improve support from volunteers, and invest in opportunities for players of all ages and abilities. It will also grant access to more funding and resources to support initiatives that benefit clubs, schools and communities in Oxfordshire. The organisation said this is a significant step forward for cricket in Oxfordshire.
Dame Mary Berry is set to meet fans at Oxford University after recently visiting a nursing home. The legendary cook was a judge on the BBC's Great British Bake Off between 2010 and 2016 before it left for Channel 4. She's lived in Henley, in the south of Oxfordshire, with her husband Paul Hunnings, since 2019. The 90-year-old has been announced as one of the special guests at Helen and Douglas House's Christmas concert at Christchurch Cathedral off St Aldate's in Oxford. Taking place on November the 24th, the evening of festive cheer will feature music, choral singing and seasonal readings. Alongside Dame Mary will the Oscar-winning actor Jeremy Irons, who also lives in Oxfordshire, as well as author Claire McIntosh. This comes after the Queen of Cakes has marked the official opening of Audley's Ship Lake Meadows in the luxury retirement village near Henley. Dame Mary said, "It was such a joy to be part of Audley's Ship Lake Meadows' official opening event. I can already see how Audley's Ship Lake Meadows will become a wonderful part of the local community, with its beautiful bar and bistro open for everyone to enjoy. I'm looking forward to seeing the village flourish in years to come." A charity is looking for volunteers to help people with disabilities enjoy the Thames. Wallingford Accessible Boat Club, WABC, which runs river trips for people who are disabled or have limited mobility, wants to expand the number of people it helps. In 2025, nearly 500 people went on trips with the club on its specially designed wheelie boat, Wow One. It wants to carry even more passengers in 2026, introducing activities including fishing, nature watching and photography. To achieve this, it needs more volunteers. John Jenkins, MBE, chair of WABC, said, "For many of our passengers, this is their only chance each year to get out on the water and feel truly free. We want to offer that experience to even more people in 2026, but we can only do it with more volunteers." The club is inviting operational volunteers to assist with trips, greet passengers and support the crew on board. It's also looking for marketing and fundraising volunteers to promote the service and help secure essential community funding, and technology and website volunteers to improve the online booking system and strengthen the charity's digital presence. No boating experience is required, just enthusiasm, practical or creative skills and a willingness to contribute. Free training and ongoing support are provided. Email Mr. Jenkins at john.jenkins@wabc.org.uk or call 07976 297835. Alternatively, visit the Wallingford Accessible Boat Club website for more information.
A man has been jailed for more than 3 years after a police chase resulted in hundreds of wraps of drugs being found. Faridur Rahman of Tollbridge Close, London, was sentenced to Oxford Crown Court on October the 10th. The court heard that the 33-year-old was found with 189 wraps of crack cocaine and 196 wraps of heroin in Oxford on August the 3rd last year. He previously pleaded guilty to 2 counts of possession of Class A drugs with the intent to supply. He was jailed for a total of 37 months. Opening the case for the prosecution, Mark Hollis told the court that police spotted Rahman's car and ordered him to stop. After stopping initially, he then fled the scene and the police chase ensued. His vehicle was eventually found abandoned and Rahman himself was found close by. The drugs wraps were found in the car's central console and the defendant's DNA was also identified. The court heard that Rahman has 10 convictions for 19 previous offences. Various drug supply offences were included, as well as being jailed for 6 years in 2019 for supply of Class A, B and C drugs. Mr. Hollis said this is a significant role case. Given the volume recovered, he would have had an expectation of significant financial gain. It is aggravated by the previous convictions. Natalie Lucas, mitigating, said he does take full responsibility for his conduct and he recognises the harm caused by drugs to our communities. There is no evidence of significant financial gain. The offence was at a difficult time in his life. He was fueled by a drug addiction and got involved with the wrong people. He was operating within a chain. It was a matter of survival rather than enterprise. As Lucas added, these offences date back to August last year. Much has changed since then. He has moved himself out of Oxford as he was surrounded by negative influences. Since relocating to London, he has engaged in drug support services to address his behaviour. He is now clean and stable and is making a sincere effort to lead a lawful and productive life. He is genuinely committed to changing his life. He has taken responsibility for his actions and he is making sure it doesn't happen again. Sentencing Rahman. Judge Michael Rocks said, "This was not a small operation. You clearly had an understanding of the scale of the operation. You have made efforts to address your offending behaviour, but you should have known not to get involved." As well as being jailed for 37 months, the judge made an order for the drugs to be destroyed.
Thames Valley Police has a greater percentage of officer dismissals than the Met Police, new data has revealed. The police force, which covers Oxfordshire, Berkshire and Buckinghamshire, sacked 40 officers in 2024 out of 5,074. This represents 0.8% of the force. Meanwhile, the same year, the seemingly often scandal-prone Metropolitan Police sacked 183 officers out of a workforce of 33,293. While the Met has sacked more, the number equates to 0.5% of officers, the same as Greater Manchester Police, which saw 43 officers sacked out of 8,112. In fact, Thames Valley Police had the third highest number of officer dismissals last year compared with all other forces. Thames Valley Police's Deputy Chief Constable Ben Suggs insisted the majority of officers and staff upheld the force's high standards. In July, Cowley-based police constables John Birch and Daniel Gunston were both sacked, having been guilty of gross misconduct. One of the officers had showed an intimate video of a woman he had been having an affair with to a colleague who lied about watching it. Former constable Martin Richards was put on the barred list in March after he repeatedly lied about working from home. Richards said he had worked full 8-hour days on 21 dates between April and October 2023, but had in fact taken days off, communicating to colleagues in emails that he was on annual leave. Mr. Snuggs said Thames Valley Police takes an extremely rigorous approach to the conduct of its workforce. "We encourage colleagues to feel empowered and speak up when they see someone not upholding the high standards we expect, which has led to an increase in reports over recent years," he said. "This shows our ongoing and steadfast commitment to ethical policing and the high standards which the public rightly expect in delivering an excellent service to all our communities." In 2024-25, the force saw more officers dismissed and placed on the barred list than in previous years. This was in the main due to a focus on misconduct hearings and accelerated misconduct hearings ahead of the new misconduct regulations coming into effect. I would like to reassure the public that the overwhelming majority of our officers and staff uphold the high standards we expect, and the number of officers and staff barred on the barred list represents 0.5% of the force. Police and Crime Commissioner Matthew Barber was approached for a comment but did not respond to our request.
A car park used by a city rowing club will now be reopened to the public. The Meadow Lane car park near Donington Bridge Road, South Oxford, was previously open to the public, but it has been used exclusively by Falcon Rowing Club since 2021. Last year, the City Council applied to turn it into a public park and display car park, which they will operate and charge people to use. The City Council's Planning Committee approved the move at its most recent meeting. The plans proved controversial, and hundreds of comments were submitted to them by the planning portal, of both objecting and supporting the proposals. Nick Barnett, treasurer of the Falcon Rowing Club, said, "We currently have more than 500 members. Most of them walk or cycle, but the club relies on a large team of volunteers. Many of these volunteers drive to the club and carry boats on their vehicles. They need to know that there will be parking spaces for them and that they won't be charged. We are happy to work with other community groups such as St Mary's and St John's School. However, we need the full car park at peak times." Claim in planning documents is that the car park is rarely full outside of rowing events. It's simply false. In reality, the car park is used every day and often full to capacity on Saturday and Sunday mornings and on many evenings. "You are putting us in a position where we don't know what the future is, and we've got all these members and there's a lot of anxiety about what's going to happen." He asked that the plans should be refused or deferred so that there can be further discussion with the club about introducing permits for members. Later in the meeting, he said the club were willing to work with the council, but that their consultation with the club had been lacking. The car park used to have capacity for over 50 cars, but over the years the number of spaces is reduced to 37. Falcon Rowing Club were supposed to have exclusive use of 35 spaces as a condition of planning permission for their new boathouse in 2020. As part of the plans to resurface the car park in 2021, Oxford City Council added a condition which said that the whole car park would be used exclusively by Falcon Rowing Club to prevent uncontrolled commuter parking and residential car parking on the site. Councillor Mae Clarkson said, "We need to make this an absolute priority to discuss with Falcon and also other established groups that use the car park to agree a sensible usage plan. To maximise the use of the car parking and to also enable these fantastic sporting clubs run by volunteers to continue to do their great work." The council had previously offered the club 8 designated spaces, but the club turned this down, arguing that this was not enough for its members or volunteers. There is no detail of what charging structure would be in place in the planning application.
Three councillors spent a night sleeping rough to raise nearly £1,800 for homelessness charities. Charlwood councillors Chris Brandt, Leslie McLean and Dorothy Walker took part in the CEO Sleep Out in Oxford, raising £1,798 and awareness for homelessness in the county. The event, organised by Oxford Homeless Movement, brought together business and community leaders on October the 9th to spend a night outdoors and hear first-hand accounts from individuals who have experienced rough sleeping. Councillor Brandt said, "One night in the cold is nothing to compare to what thousands endure every night. We were reminded by someone who had slept rough that while we may be tired and freezing tonight, we won't have to face this again tomorrow. Homelessness is not inevitable. It is a consequence of political choices. We must ensure everyone has the basic dignity of a safe home. And that means building council housing again in this country." Councillor Brandt called on the government to invest in council housing to tackle the root causes of homelessness in a video message. Councillor Walker, chair of Charwell District Council, said, "I'm deeply grateful to my colleagues for standing with me. Oxfordshire's homeless charities change lives, and I hope our efforts inspire others to take action. New figures released by the Movement of Homelessness, confirmed 1,611 people experiencing homelessness died in 2024, a 9% increase on the previous year.
Haunted underground prison tunnels below Oxford, where one of the UK's most notorious serial killers was held, are to be open to the public for the first time. Oxford Castle and Prison will host its biggest ghost fest ever this October, giving people unique opportunities to learn about the dark and mysterious history of the city. For the first time during the annual event, tunnels running between the former prison and the county hall will be opened for guests to take part in guided tours. The tour will also include visits to some areas usually off-limit to the public, including the castle's punishment cells. Several walkways can be found underground, with these cells also left intact since last being used in the 20th century. Arguably the most famous of those who was housed in the cells was notorious serial killer Donald Nielsen, known as the Black Panther. Nielsen, who died while incarcerated in 2011, murdered four people between 1971 and 1995, was given five life sentences after being arrested 50 years ago. Those working at the location claim to have witnessed instances of the supernatural too, with the doors being slammed shut on their own, as well as the dead allegedly talking. Visitors wanted to see inside firsthand will be taken via a tunnel from the prison's A-wing beneath Justice Walk and the Coroner's Court and into the courtroom. They'll be open for one night only to become part of a paranormal evening, which will see a ghost hunt conducted around the site, led by leading paranormal investigator Barry Garhi. Oxford Castle and Prison highly anticipated Halloween ghost tours will return with the promise of being more chilling than ever. The immersive journey takes guests on a trip to uncover some of the most horrid tales of inhabitants, some of whom were still said to be roaming the surroundings. Kessia Middlemore, operations manager at Oxford Castle and Prison, said, "For the very first time, visitors will be able to step inside the hidden tunnels that once connected the prison to the county hall. These dark passageways carried countless prisoners on their final walk to the courtroom, and the chance to follow in their footsteps is an experience steeped in both history and atmosphere." Alongside these exclusive tours, guests can look forward to spine-tingling ghost hunts, chilling tales on our renowned ghost tours, and magical activities for families.
An MP has welcomed an amendment to a bill to ensure military family housing is held to the same legal standards as civilian rented homes. Callum Miller, MP for Bicester and Woodstock, celebrated the Liberal Democrat amendment to the Renters' Rights Bill. It will require the Ministry of Defence to assess military accommodation annually against the Decent Home Standard and publicly release the results. The Ministry of Defence will be legally obliged to detect and rectify issues such as damp, pest infestation and heating failures. Mr Miller said, "This is a huge win for our service families. I am delighted the government has finally listened and accepted the Liberal Democrat proposal to legally bring military housing in line with the same standards as everyone else's homes. This is the first time military homes will be subject to the same minimum standards as civilian housing." Mr Miller, who has consistently called for improvements in service accommodation in Ambrosden, Arncott and Caversfield, said the decision will make a real difference to families locally.
An iconic 500-year-old pub is facing astronomical costs, causing its manager to ask, "Is this really worth it?" For 16 years, Jo Walkley Pratt and her husband Keith have run the Bear Hotel, which has been overlooking Wantage's marketplace since the time of Henry VIII. Having worked at the Royal Oak in Wantage and GW Bar in Swindon before moving to the Bear, the couple has now celebrated 30 years in the industry, in partnership with Arkell's Brewery. Despite that time, including the 2008 cash crisis and the subsequent recession, as well as the smoking ban and the COVID pandemic, Ms. Walkley-Pratt said that now it is more difficult to be a Republican than ever. She said, "It's the hardest financially, I would say, with everything that's been brought in by the Labour government. The Bear has between 30 and 40 staff," and she said that tax changes and the raising of the minimum wage have in particular put costs through the roof. She said the costs are just astronomical. I mean, I think it's like £2,500 a year just to be able to play music for a performance rights licence. Other significant bills include national insurance contributions, business rates, utilities, stock prices, the TV licence and rising insurance premiums. "We have to take so much money now just to stand still," Ms. Walkley-Pratt said. "For us, because we're family and we still carry on for our daughters who are running the place as well, otherwise at times you think, God, is this really worth it?" With a budget coming up, the publican said the most significant change would be something like lower VAT on food, which would make a massive difference. She said, "You can only charge so much because you'll have people saying, well, I can go to Sainsbury's for something like that." They don't realise is that they have to take £40,000 a week just to stand still. Echoing Ms. Walkley-Pratt's statement, Brett Lownish of the Campaign for Real Ales said she wants a real support to be a priority in the upcoming budget. He added, "The pub is vital to people's social lives and well-being, providing a place to meet with friends and family where the locals can feel part of a greater community." Even with the current challenges facing the industry, the Walkley-Platts remain enthusiastic as they gradually hand over to their daughters. Across the 30 years in the trade, Ms. Walkley-Pratt said they have a number of memorable encounters. "In one of our previous pubs, Princess Anne came in for lunch," she said.
A store at Oxford Westgate Shopping Centre will reopen next month in time for Christmas. The busy retail spot in Oxford City Centre is home to a variety of big-name brands, including Primark, Next and TK Maxx. Goldsmiths, on the middle floor of Westgate, has been closed since the summer with construction work ongoing behind hoardings. The watch and jewellery store, situated next to Blackwell's bookshop, has been blocked off for months, with builders being heard drilling during the shop's hiatus. Signage outside said that once it reopens, there will be a redesigned Rolex showroom within the unit. Now, an opening date in terms of month has been released by the shopping centre, with a new statement claiming that Goldsmiths will open its doors in November. A spokesperson from Westgate Oxford said, "Goldsmiths will be opening its revamped store at Westgate in November, joining the hotly anticipated arrival of Sephora, as well as a new upsized Oliver Bonus to follow before Christmas. We've also just welcomed the new retailer, Gift Company, this week, a family-run business with a gorgeous assortment of homewares and gifts. We're excited to offer an abundance of choice for our guests, especially in the run-up to the festive season." This news follows the return of Menkind, which opened inside a new unit on the bottom floor in September, following the closure of its original store opposite Goldsmiths this year.
Rare paintings of the Cotswolds by the artist L.S. Lowry are expected to fetch millions of pounds when they go on sale. The Modern British and Irish Art Evening sale at Christie's London will see a number of works from private collections go on auction on Wednesday, October 22nd. Works on offer include 1928's Going to the Match, valued at between £2 million and £3 million, Industrial Landscape, finished in 1957, and valued between £250,000 and £350,000, as well as 1947's Boughton on the Water and 1938's A Footbridge, which are both valued at between £400,000 and £600,000. Nick Orchard, head of Modern British and Irish Art at Christie's, said, "We are delighted to be offering these paintings by L.S. Lowry, each coming from distinguished private collections. Together they reflect some of Lowry's most important themes, as well as rare subjects, and the chance to see them side by side is a special opportunity."
Oxford is to receive close to £1 million that will go towards preventing homelessness. This money comes from nearly £70 million for the Rough Sleeping Prevention and Recovery Grant. This is flexible funding for 62 local authorities to prevent people sleeping rough and help them stay off the streets. Handed to Oxford City Council, the funding was announced on World Homeless Day, October the 10th. Linda Smith, Cabinet Member for Housing, welcomed the extra money through the Rough Sleeping Prevention and Recovery Grant. Every pound will go into bolstering initiatives that support the city's housing, homelessness and rough sleeping strategy to ensure better outcomes for those experiencing homelessness and rough sleeping in Oxford, she said. More multidisciplinary support for those with complex needs, a faster protocol to get vulnerable people to a place of safety and further support helping them to be rehoused will result from this funding. The programmes this funding will support, including our Outreach and Prevention Service, our Somewhere Safe to Stay programme, and our winter provision for rough sleepers are crucial in helping remove obstacles to achieving relative independence. We will also be launching a grant fund for online organisations delivering crucial homelessness services. This fund will support the objectives of the government funding and will specifically focus on enhancing relationships with those organisations in the community, faith and voluntary sectors. We continue to experience significant demand pressure on our temporary accommodation services in Oxford, and these additional funds will help us address the housing and homelessness crisis in the city. The investment provides tailored services for those experiencing long-term rough sleeping, including mental health support, drug and alcohol treatment, and sustainable accommodation, ensuring people get the help they need to rebuild their lives. Housing Secretary Steve Reid said, "Homelessness is a moral stain on our society. Growing numbers of people have been abandoned to sleep rough on the streets and children left in squalid, overcrowded conditions. This government will not stand idly by and allow that to continue. We will make different choices." The government announced a total of £84 million to help prevent homelessness and family support this winter. Sean Palmer, chief executive at homeless charity St Mungo's, said, "Winter is a particularly challenging time for people affected by homelessness, so this injection of funds will be invaluable. It will help ensure services like St Mungo's can continue to support people off the streets and into emergency accommodation where they can rebuild their lives."
The number of rapes and sexual offences being reported to Thames Valley Police has reached the highest figure in at least 3 years. Nearly 7,000 rape and sexual offences have been reported to Thames Valley Police in the past year. Figures obtained from the police force through a Freedom of Information request by Sexual Abuse Compensation Advice have revealed. In 2022-23, 6,431 rape and sexual offences reported to Thames Valley Police. Before this, the number dropped to 6,178 a year. Over the past year, the force has seen an increase in reported offences, with the total standing at 6,900. This is a rise of nearly 12% since 2023-24. While the amount of offences being reported has risen, a Thames Valley Police spokesman said, "Outcomes continue to be positive, with a 18+% of positive outcomes for rape and 56+% for other sexual offences in the year to date." In response to the new figures, Leila Moran, MP for Oxford West and Abingdon, said, "It's horrifying to see so many people suffering sexual violence last year, and very possibly more. My heart goes out to every survivor, their friends and their family. Every rape and sexual assault is a tragedy that should never have happened. We all have a duty to ensure everyone is safe from sexual violence. Where this does occur, every survivor needs to feel confident to report the crime. They need to know that it will be treated with respect and dignity, and their experience will be investigated thoroughly. It is not acceptable that sexual predators should remain free while the people they have attacked often endure lengthy traumatic processes just to be heard. I was concerned to hear that funding for independent sexual violence advocates, ISVAs, has moved from survivor space to Thames Valley Police. We need to know that the impact of the change will have on survivors coming forward, particularly if they have had poor experiences with the police in the past. Meanwhile, I understand that the counselling waiting list for survivors of sexual violence is growing, resulting in delays of 2 years or more. The Lib Dems MP added, "While the figures provided by Thames Valley Police are encouraging, I worry about these recent funding changes. We need to do more to protect and support survivors, not less." City Councillor and Cabinet Member for Safer Oxford, Lubna Arshad, added, "Sadly, rape and sexual assault remain the scourge of our society, with 6 of every 7 rapes committed by a partner. I commend the bravery of victims and survivors for reporting these offences to the police and the work they do to investigate these heinous crimes. That's why Oxford City Council grant fund Survivor Space Oxford, who do important work to support survivors of sexual abuse, rape and harassment across the Oxfordshire. Nationally, between January and March this year, a total of 98 rape prosecutions were abandoned, with the Crown Prosecution Service being accused of betraying victims due to a lack of support and long waiting lists to come to court. Official CPS figures have seen the number of rape prosecutions being ditched rise from 160 in 2021-22 to 608 in 24-25. Policy advisor at the Survivors Trust, Lucy Duckworth, said, "I think we need a huge cultural and societal shift, such as making it mandatory for all police and frontline staff to have training in working with survivors of sexual violence, because we are now looking at around 40 million adult survivors in this country. A lot of this comes down to the victim-blaming culture that exists within our society, which of course puts people off. One of the main problems is that we intervene once the offence has already happened. We have got to stop trying to address the symptoms of abuse rather than the actual abuse itself."
A McDonald's restaurant helped to bring joy to poorly children and their families in Oxford. The Headington branch teamed up with Oxford's Ronald McDonald House to host a day of fun for families staying at the home away from home accommodation. The houses, next to specialist NHS children's hospitals, allow families to be by their child's bedside in a matter of moments while maintaining a degree of normality during difficult times. Jodie Keeley and Darren Lyde from Northampton spent 95 days at the Oxford House after their quadruplets were born prematurely at Oxford John Radcliffe Hospital. Miss Keeley said, "Without the lovely accommodation and generosity of Ronald McDonald House Oxford, our hospital journey would have been very different. We were able to remain close to our 4 babies day and night, and we'll forever be grateful to Ronald McDonald House Charities UK." Staff members from nearby McDonald's restaurants volunteered at the event, which included face painting, activities and happy meals. Ismail Anilmis, franchisee of the Headington McDonald's, said, "I'm so proud of my crew at the Oxford restaurant for volunteering to support our local house."
Nearly 2,000 charitable donations have been made since the launch of a campaign to rehome good quality used items a year ago. The Charwell District Council scheme helps to give a second life to items not suitable for blue bin recycling. Launched in partnership with Anglo Doorstep Collections on October 7, 2024, it has collected 74 tonnes of clothes and household items from homes across North Oxfordshire. Donations are sorted and distributed by Anglo Doorstep Collections to where they are needed most, both across the UK and worldwide. Councillor Ian Middleton, portfolio holder for Neighbourhood Services, said, "Our partnership with Anglo Doorstep Collections has really tapped into our residents' desire to minimise their impact on the planet when they need to dispose of old and wilted items. Reuse is a great option for items like shoes and clothes because they're made of a mix of materials and can be hard for the recycling industry to process. A doorstep collection service removes many of the barriers to the reuse of second-hand items and the number of people using the Angler service is increasing all the time.
Oxfordshire County Council is working to secure central government funding to help replace the ageing Kennington Rail Bridge. Bridge is a key part of the Southern Bypass, connecting key sites across Oxford and carrying around 50,000 vehicles a day. Councillor Judy Roberts, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Place, Environment and Climate Action, said, "This project is essential for the future of our local road network, and it also works with the Environment Agency's Oxford Flood Alleviation Scheme, providing more capacity for floodwater and protecting homes, businesses and crucial transport links. We have maintained the rail bridge since it was passed to us from central government, but the structure now needs to be replaced. We cannot meet the full cost on our own, and we have therefore started work to secure national support to make sure this vital part of the Oxfordshire road network is replaced. The wider Kennington Improvement Project includes plans for a shared walking and cycling path, a new eastbound bus and park and ride lane, and improved flood protection for homes, businesses and crucial transport links. The Council has written to the Chancellor and the Secretary of State for Transport requesting financial support from the Department of Transport's new Structures Fund to help to close a £71 million funding gap. The total estimated cost of the project now stands at £180 million, up from earlier projections. This increase is due to engineering challenges uncovered during detailed design work and rising construction material costs. The remaining cost of the project is being met by the County Council and Environment Agency. In October 2024, the Council received planning permission for the improvements. The detailed design work, construction methodologies and all necessary surveys are now nearly complete. The project will involve replacing the bridge one side at a time, allowing traffic to continue using the route under managed conditions. A water main and fibre optic connections need to be diverted away from the rail bridge, and overhead electricity cables need to be considered during work. As the bridge spans a busy passenger and freight railway line, access and construction will need to be carefully coordinated. The rising costs has been attributed to inflation, the need for complex temporary works to keep the structure stable during construction, and a two-stage Thames water pipe diversion. The Council is now preparing its case for government funding and is awaiting further details about the Department for Transport Structures Fund, which was announced by the Chancellor in June to support the renewal of transport infrastructure across the UK.
Model railway fans were delighted to see a once familiar sight being brought back to life, the cooling towers at Didcot Power Station. Coal-fired Didcot A Power Station closed in 2013, and its six cooling towers, which were dominated the skyline for decades, were then demolished. Three of the towers were demolished in 2014, with the remaining three demolished in 2019. Visitors to the Didcot Model Railway exhibition at the Civic Hall on Saturday got a chance to see a model of the cooling towers, including clouds of steam. The event, featuring lots of different model railway layouts, was organised by the Abingdon and District Model Railway Club. The club was established about 50 years ago, and for the past 16 years has been based in North Abingdon. Since 2018, it has been registered as a UK charity.
Guidance on how patients and staff can get to Oxford's hospital after the congestion charge begins has been issued by Oxfordshire County Council. Motorists will have to pay £5 to drive through any of the six roads included in the scheme, unless they have a permit or exemption. The scheme will begin on Wednesday, October the 29th, and is due to end when Botley Road reopens in August 2026. Two of the roads affected by the charge, Marston Ferry Road and Holloway, are closed to the John Radcliffe, Churchill and Nuffield hospitals in Headington. For these roads, the charge will be in place from Monday to Saturday, from 7 to 9 and from 3 to 6. In a social media post, the County Council said, "Many people won't even need to change their route. However, if you want to make sure you avoid passing through a congestion charge location, plan your route before you travel. If you can use the park and ride, journeys to and from the hospitals will be free from the 29th of October for 3 months initially, with a valid park and ride ticket for up to 2 adults and 3 children under 16 years of age. The 600, 700, X3 and X32 buses stop at or near John Radcliffe, Churchill and Nuffield hospitals. People can get the 600 or 700 from Thornhill Park and Ride, the 700 from Oxford Parkway and the 600 from Redbridge Park and Ride. The council added, if you're unable to use the park and ride or buses, please don't worry. You will still be able to drive to all the hospitals without passing through a congestion charge location. Frequent hospital patients who live in Oxford are among those who are exempt from paying the congestion charge. They will need to submit evidence of hospital appointments showing their name, which could include letters, appointment cards, emails, texts and screenshots from the NHS app. Other permits are available for blue badge holders, business cars used as goods vehicle and unpaid carers. The congestion charge only applies to cars, not other vehicles, and emergency vehicles are exempt. Oxford residents can apply for 100 day passes a year, while those living in Oxfordshire can apply for 25. Oxford University Hospital NHS Foundation Trust previously said that the £5 charge could be detrimental to staff, given the cost of living crisis, in their response to the consultation. They added that many staff live outside the ring road and that those who commute by walking, cycling or public transport will benefit from less congestion. The scheme was approved by the County Council last month, despite 74% of residents who responded to the public consultation opposing it.
Councillors have criticised newly approved plans for a retirement living block in a village outside Oxford that is crying out for affordable homes. Glebe House, a former care home in Mill Street in Kidlington, will be demolished and replaced with a new building for 38 care apartments for over 60s. The development would have shared facilities including a communal lounge, a hotel-style guest suite for visitors, mobility scooter storage and landscape gardens. The plans were approved by Charwell District Council's Planning Committee at their meeting last Thursday, October the 2nd. Fellow Green Councillor Fiona Mawson, who represents Yarnton, said, "It's yet another major apartment development in Kidlington, which has been allowed to go ahead without virtually no affordable housing at all. This isn't the fault of the Planning Department or the committee. Their hands are tied by the government legislation that guarantees private developers a healthy profit and allows them to use viability assessments to avoid affordable housing provision. Kidlington is crying out for affordable housing. People who were born and raised in Kidlington have to move miles away from their families in order to be able to afford a place to live and start a family of their own. It always seems to be Kidlington that ends up with the poor end of the deal, with the development being brought to the council with little or no affordable housing provision. Glebe House was run by Oxford Care Partnerships, whilst the land was owned by Oxford County Council. The County Council decided to close it in 2021 due to the lack of residents living there, and it has been vacant since then. Green Councillor Ian Middleton, who represents Kidlington East, spoke against the plans at the meeting. He said, "These are going to be very expensive apartments which are likely to be quite lucrative for the developer. As the landowners, I think the County Council should have insisted that any development on that site should have included a significant element of affordable housing. The developers contributed just over £63,000 to fund off-site affordable housing as a condition of the planning permission, which Councillor Middleton called a paltry figure. A spokesperson for McCarthy and Stone said they were delighted that the development had got planning permission and argued that the development will free up affordable housing elsewhere. It added, while the development itself does not deliver any on-site affordable housing, the scheme secures financial contributions toward affordable housing."
A council leader says she is confident that updated plans to reduce street lighting in Oxfordshire will not reduce public safety. The proposal, dubbed Park Night Lighting, were announced by Oxfordshire County Council last November and involve reducing or switching off street lighting in areas of Oxfordshire for part of the night. The plans were met with a huge backlash last year. including from Thames Valley Police and Crime Commissioner Matthew Barber, whose petition against the plans received more than 1,600 signatures in less than 72 hours. Now the council says that street lighting times across the county could be amended if communities specifically request it under an updated policy to present it to its cabinet soon. The park night lighting framework is recommended for approval on October the 21st, having been deferred from last November, so further discussions and consultation could take place. Councillor Liz Leffman, leader of Oxfordshire County Council, says the authority has learned lessons and is confident the updated policy and the way it would be implemented would not reduce public safety. If approved, requests to turn off streetlights between 11:30 p.m. and 5:30 a.m. in rural areas and from midnight to 5:30 a.m. in urban areas would only be considered if they are proposed by the parish or town council and the ward county councillor in a similar way to how the council's 20-mile-an-hour programme operates. The framework contains a series of exemptions to make sure park night lighting is not considered in places where it might compromise safety, such as major road junctions, slip roads, rail crossings, areas of traffic calming, waterside paths, remote alleyways, high crime areas, and locations supporting the nighttime economy. For these reasons, major urban areas such as Oxford are unlikely to be suitable to take part in the scheme, and the lights would stay on all night. Councillor Leffman said, "Since November, we have been engaging with stakeholders, held a public consultation, which have informed the updated policy and the proposed implementation framework. If approved, park night lighting would only be implemented on a case-by-case basis."
A business claims footfall on a high street has taken a real knock just 1 year after it was named amongst the country's best. In September 2024, the Daily Mail released a 32-name list highlighting the very best streets in the UK, with Wallingford making the cut. The newspaper spoke to the property experts and travel agents to see where was the best high street. They said despite the rise of online shopping and the trend for working from home, many of Britain's high streets remain in the beating heart of their communities, as well as being a magnet for visitors bored by the chain store's experience. Buzzing with activity thanks to the quirky independent stores, coffee shops and restaurants, as well as an overall sense of community, they also attract home buyers from far and wide. But just over a year on, one local business says Wallingford's high street, like many others, isn't looking anywhere near as bustling as it deserves. Amy Collins, Chief Executive and co-owner of restaurant and bar Five Little Pigs in St Mary's Street, said footfall in the last year has taken a real knock. "It has such a vibrant range of independent shops, but footfall in the last year has taken a real knock, and it only feels like a matter of time before some of them are forced to give up," she said. However, she praised the community spirit in the town. "I've never known the community spirit like the Wallingford. We were community funded, with our locals raising over £50,000 to help towards our opening costs. I don't think many restaurants can boast that level of support from such a small town." Nina Sarpong, owner of sports shop Runwise in St Mary's Street and founder of Women's Only Running Group, echoed this. "There is a great community spirit in local people really try to support the local independent businesses," she said. "There are lots of community events and organisations, annual litter pick, bunk fest, corn exchange, theatre, Agatha Christie weekend, Wallingford Christmas fair, community running group, community interest boutique, Wallingford accessible boat, Wallingford volunteer drivers, and many more. Local businesses support, promote and promote each other." Ms Collins said the recent rise in car parking seems to have had an impact on footfall. "Starting this month, the eatery will be taking the cost of parking at local car parks off customers' bills if they visit in the week lunch, with the aim of keeping people in the town. It's the first time we've moved to compensate guests for parking, but I think it might end a good incentive in a world where eating out is already much more costly than it used to be," said Ms. Collins.
And that is all the news for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Ox Talk, please feel free to contact us by phoning 07496 062 280. That is 07496 062 280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message, or you can send us an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and past editions are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can listen to these editions directly or download them online. If you need any help or have any further queries, please feel free to contact us. That is all for now. We hope you have a wonderful week, and thank you for listening.